Well, will you open with me in prayer? Gracious and loving God, I ask that you fill this space today, that you be upon our hearts. May you open our minds, may you open our souls so that we might hear how you are calling us to be more passionate servants of Christ, how we might honor you. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Well, if I have not had the chance to meet you, my name is Jimmy Decker. I've had the great privilege of being one of the pastors here at St. Andrew, and you have the great privilege of getting to serve alongside this congregation for years and years, and I'm really excited because this is my first time ever getting to be a part of this service, because I'm typically over in Contemporary, and I got to tell you, I've preached a lot of services here in the history and the life of St. Andrew, traditional, contemporary, Good Friday, Monday, Thursday. Nobody's ever been as nervous for me preaching a service as they have been for this one. And I don't know what that says. Admittedly, I didn't help the situation because at one point this week I did say I was going to wear some Air Jordan sneakers to come and preach in, and Kim Myers was like, Jimmy, no. It was like her mom voice came in, and then I realized this morning I literally got dressed in brown sneakers which clashed with a black robe, and so like I'm not killing it right now, but it's fine. We're going to recover. Today, though, we're going to continue on in our series, which is titled Dear Church. And the entire purpose of this series is for us to walk through verse by verse, passage by passage, the book of Colossians, where we're getting to read through Paul's instruction to this church about how it is that they can live more faithfully. Because as you might remember, what's happening in this church is that they're having all this Greek and Roman influence that's coming in and really infiltrating how the church is trying to operate. And what ends up happening is you have a lot of these Christians saying, well, I can worship Jesus and I can also worship, you know, like these Greek gods too. And it's all fine. It's all kind of like the same thing. And Paul writes this letter very explicitly to say like, no. Jesus is the one supreme being. It's either all Jesus or it's nothing. Like, there's really no in between. You can't hold these two things together. And what ends up happening is he's been giving this instruction all throughout chapters 1 and 2, and then we get to chapter 3, and this is really where I think we get, like, the tactical instruction. This is, here's how you're going to do this. If you do these steps, now you're going to actually live into the very words that we're talking about. Because in chapter 3, starting in verse 1, this is what Paul ends up teaching the Colossians. He says, since then you have been raised with Christ. Set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things above, not on earthly things. For you died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature: sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must also rid yourself of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Here there is no Gentile or Jew. There is no circumcised or uncircumcised. There is no barbarian, no Scythian, no slave or free, but Christ is all, and Christ is in all. This very clear instruction of, hey, you've been living in this way, and I want you to reimagine what it means to live in this way. And for this to come from Paul is notable, because Paul is this guy who used to live in one way. Paul is the guy who used to put Christians to death. Paul is the guy who was this devout Jewish leader, which means he also had this mentality that said, like, listen, at the end of the day, if you do something wrong, you know, Scripture has a conversion chart. For every sin that you do, you do this many sacrifices, and then you're good again. And so Paul had this mentality that you really could hold the world as it once was and still, you know, be faithful. And now you've got Paul realizing that as he decided to follow Jesus, he has to give up everything about how he was living. And the reason I love that passage, and the reason I love that imagery of Paul, is because it's not a thing where, like, Paul has to actually reimagine what it means to have life. It's more like a hard reboot. It's more like every time we call any sort of IT support desk, and the first thing they're going to say is like, listen, did you try turning it off and turning it back on again? All right, like, well, try that. Okay, wait 10 seconds, right? And what ends up actually happening when you do that is it's not like the device learns how to operate in a different way. The device actually just begins to operate the way it was always supposed to, because all the junk that had been messing with it has actually all been wiped clean, and now you've actually just gone back to the original intent of what that creation was. And in this same way, what you end up seeing with Paul is his argument is saying, no, you just need to give up all the stuff that was standing in the way of who you were called to be. The hard part for that, for us, though, is we don't always really want to do that. Like, we actually like ending up having all these other parts of our lives where we get stuff out of it. We all end up actually really loving our Saturdays and our Fridays and our Thursdays all the way back to Monday, even if they don't always line up with who we're called to be on Sunday. See, we all have this idea that, like, we get all inspired on Sunday and we're like, I'm going to be all about Jesus this week. It's going to be great and everything's going wonderful until something happens and we don't really want Jesus to watch, right? Like, somebody cuts us off in traffic and I'm like, I'm going to need somebody to distract Jesus for a hot second, right? Because, like, I'm going to need to react to this in this moment. And we think, like, okay, I want to be the person that Jesus called me to be until I need a little bit of leeway and flexibility. We either end up doing that or we end up creating this like partitioned existence where we say, okay, I've got my Sunday life and my Sunday life is great and this is who my family is when we're here on Sundays. And then we can leave and now I can go enter into a different life on Mondays. And now I can have my work life and I can be who I need to be for my work existence. And then I can go from work to go coach my son's little league team, right? And now I can be who I need to be when I'm coaching my son's little league team. And then from there, I can go have dinner with some guys in a fantasy football league, right? And I can be who I need to be there. And ultimately, the reason why we can do that is because typically those circles never really overlap. Like, there's probably not as many people who are like in our fantasy league that are also going to church with us. And there's probably not very many people, if any, that are at our workplace that are also parents in our kids' baseball leagues. And so for the most part, we can actually have a very partitioned life and it never actually end up colliding and doing anything wrong. Until it does, and we realize how in trouble we actually are. And this, for me, the prime example of this was my wife and I's wedding weekend. We got married in 2018. It was absolutely phenomenal. It was everything I dreamt it was going to be. We got married in downtown Dallas, down in Deep Ellum. And while we got married at this gorgeous venue. It was the old Gulf Oil Distribution Warehouse. Sounds less romantic than it was. They had pretty lights. We did ride a freight elevator. We rode a freight elevator to our first dance, which is like getting out. Like, hold on, let me. And we like walk out. It was, again, not the. It was better than it sounds. I promise. Anyway, in that, everything about it was everything we dreamt it was going to be. But there's one part I didn't anticipate, and that was the fact that like, all of the circles of our lives all came together in a way I wasn't necessarily ready for. And I'm looking over and I'm like, why is my high school friends talking to my church small group? They're either talking about the weather or the one thing they all have in common, which is me, and that's not gonna go great. So hold on, Grandma, I gotta stop a tragedy from happening, right? And like, you get into this moment where like, all of a sudden, we don't know what to do. Because we've built all these different partitioned lives, and it's fine until they're not. It's like this weird crossover episode where you're like, those characters should never interact. Like George Costanza and Meredith Grey, like those two should never be in the same room at the same time. And when they are, it's just terrifying for us. And the problem with this is we go, okay, that's not actually what I want. I don't want to live a life where I'm afraid of these two circles ever actually colliding, of these worlds coming together and it just resulting in something negative. I want a life that doesn't involve that. And the reality is the only way for us to do that is to have a foundation that's built on something that can supersede any of those things coming together. And bluntly, the only foundation you can build that actually works for that is to have a universal foundation that's built on the one who created the universe. And this is what it means for us to have Jesus to be at the center of everything we do, because if Jesus can be that foundation, if we can give up all of these other pieces and Jesus becomes this universal foundation, we don't have to keep our lives separate, because actually our lives just start stacking on top of each other in this beautiful coalescence. I read this book about a year ago that I absolutely loved. I would definitely recommend it. It was called The Habits of the Household. And the purpose of The Habits of the Household was to demonstrate that we all have these elements of our lives. We all have these facets of our lives that become very routine for us. And they end up becoming so routine that we end up actually starting to grit our teeth to get through them, or we start going through the motions in them and not actually appreciating them for what they are. And in there, the writer describes a typical day for he and his household that is effectively this. He's like, so I wake up, my wife and I get ready for work, we get our kids ready, we then put the kids in the car, we go drop them off, we then go to either work or errands or anything we need to do, we then get off of work, we go pick up the kids, we then go to whatever extracurriculars we have going on. From there, we end up going and running any errands that need to be ran, we then go home and have dinner, we then try to accomplish any homework that needs to be done, then we try to get through bath time with our toddler boys, then we get our toddler boys in bed, then we try to decompress for a hot second, and then we try to go to bed. And the reality is that as I'm reading this, I'm like, yeah, that's basically my life too. And the reality is, it's like every single human being in this world could look at that and be, yeah, you change one or two variables and that's basically it. That's life. And the thing is we become so numb to that routine that we start finding ways that we can inject any sort of other things that can break up the routine, which is why for most human beings, the very first thing we do when we wake up is we look at our phone. The very first thing we do that we wake up is we look at our phone as an opportunity to say, okay, what's going on in the world? What can break up the stuff that I'm always going through? And his pitch in this book is this idea of what is it going to look like if you could actually make Christ the center of each part of your routine? Such that you don't begin to dread it, you don't begin to just grind your teeth to get through it, but you actually end up enjoying it. And the best example that he gives in there is, he gives this example of like, so he's got these toddler boys, and he's like, listen, every time we do bath time, it's basically WWE, right? Like, it's just two boys just like pounding, like hitting each other in a bath time. And I'm just like, you know, just saying like, would you two just stop it and just, you know, take them by the necks, getting them into pajamas and saying like, go to bed type of thing, right? And in that, he then goes downstairs and he realizes like, oh, their last image of the world before they went to bed was one of their dad frustrated. Instead of an image of Christ. How am I doing bath and bedtime wrong? I was talking to our student ministry director, Brian Colligan, about this book as I was reading it. I was like, yeah, it's really interesting, and me and him were connecting. And so here's the deal. Like, I always do, I make the lunches for my entire household, right? So, like, and the reason being, like, I don't have hair, and my wife does have hair. And so, like, my mornings are quicker than hers is all I'm saying, right? And so, like, I was telling Brian Colligan this, and he's like, I mean, I make the lunches too, Jimmy, but I've got beautiful hair, so, like, I can't really relate on that piece. But, like, we were talking about that, and I was like, yeah, you know, like, most of the time I'm just trying to get through it as quick as possible. And he was like, oh, I don't do that. I was like, what are you saying? And he said, I actually take a moment, and when I'm making each person's breakfast, my wife or either one of my sons, or lunches rather, I take that as an opportunity to pray to God that their day might be blessed. And that is my day to be, that is my moment in each day to take just a few seconds to pray to God that my son, JT, my son, Liam, and my wife, Janelle, they could all be blessed. And it's just beautiful. And I mean, I'm looking at him like, yeah, I promise I do that too. That's absolutely how I spend my days. And I realized that like, that's the brokenness of it. When we think about what it means to let go of all the other pieces of this world, to hard reboot, to hard reset, that's what it ends up looking like, is we don't just actually get through the world. We're not looking at things to kind of excite us or break things apart. We're actually investing in the pieces of our lives that we have in such a way that they might become a blessing. And the truth is as important it is for us to treat our routine in that way, the number one place that we need to look at this is actually in our relationships with others. Because as important as it is to pray over a lunch as I'm making it for my wife and for my four-year-old, it is far more important for me to actually invest in each of them. And this is Paul's next instruction, where Paul continues on in this passage. And in Colossians 3:18, he says this. He says, "Wives, submit yourselves to your husband as is fitting to the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you, and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Since you know that you receive an inheritance from God as a reward, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism." So that passage is the number one requested passage that I am never to say at a wedding. Like a fiancé or like a soon-to-be bride comes in and she's like, "So you're not saying that one, right?" And I'm like, "Listen, I married a full-blooded Italian. Like there's no, she submits to Christ, but like she's, that ain't gonna work." And in that, the funny thing is like that passage, for us to preach on that on the week of Valentine's Day, I think is hilarious because it's, you know, the most romantic of all the passages in Paul's letters. But in that, what we find is this passage that makes a lot of people uncomfortable. And the reason for the discomfort, honestly, comes from just our lack of being able to see it for what Paul's original intent was. Because any passage ought to be understood in the context of which it was written. And so in this day and age, what you had is you had Paul writing to a church that was deeply influenced by Greek and Roman culture, which meant that you had Roman philosophers like Josephus who had designed this household vision, this household code. And the design of this was to create miniature empires. Because the idea was like, okay, if we could make miniature empires where you have like the man of the household becomes like a miniature emperor, then all of these individual households will themselves learn what it means to be loyal and to submit and show respect and authority to the empire of Rome and to the Roman Empire. And if we all do this as every one of our households, then Rome will prosper and it will never fall. And spoiler alert, it did. So, in that, what you find is this example of Paul writing to a people who deeply already understood this cultural context. So when Paul writes, "Wives, submit to your husbands," wives would have heard this and been like, "Yeah, we're already doing that, Paul. That's not interesting." When he says, "Children, obey your parents," there was already this cultural expectation that they were meant to obey their parents. When you had him saying, "Slaves, obey your masters," there was already the expectation to do it. And that's why looking at this, not only in the context of the time it was written, but actually all the words that are said is so critical. Because it's not the "wives submit to your husband" part that ends up making this a beautiful passage. It's the part that comes after. It's the part that says, "For it is pleasing to the Lord. Children, obey your parents, for this pleases God." This is what makes it beautiful, because it's the second half that actually bucks the expectation that everybody had, which was, "We're already doing that, but now I can understand how to do this for Christ." And this is why he also adds in lines about, "Hey, and also husbands, fathers, this is how you're supposed to respond as well," because there was no cultural expectation in Roman culture that husbands were supposed to show kindness in respect to their wives and to their children. And so now all of a sudden, he's reframing everybody's mentality and saying, do this in such a way that if Christ were to walk through your household, Christ would find pride and joy in the way that your family operates. to where it removes this idea of this hierarchy system and instead actually puts it in the context of, like, what does the person that you love actually deserve? Because the reality is that, like, you know, for my wife and I love her so much. I love her with my entire heart. And what does it actually mean to submit for us? Submit actually is a sign of understanding and respecting the authority that one has as the role that they have in your life. And so how is it that I can show respect and kindness to my wife who plays the role of my spouse in this world and vice versa? And more importantly, how do we do this in such a way that we actually glorify God as a result? This is why it is so critical for us to have this foundation of Christ that be at the center of everything that we do. Because the reality is that when we start putting the effort towards becoming more and more like Christ, more and more closer to who Christ has called us to be, we end up actually finding ourselves drawing closer to the relationships we have in this world. And it has nothing to do with whether or not you're actually fulfilling some role. And it has everything to do with the fact of, are you doing this in such a way that Christ finds joy as a result? And this is how you can have spouses who live into more, quote unquote, traditional roles in a household, and they have the greatest marriage ever, but it's because they have Christ be actually at the center of it. And it's how you can have a couple who, you know, like, they don't necessarily follow the same that same structure, but they have Christ at the center of it, and they have this beautiful and most incredible marriage ever, because at the end of the day, what they have found is that when they honor Christ, every part of their life, every fragmented, partitioned circle of their life sits on top of each other, and they find wholeness for the first time. And this is the same thing Christ wants for us. And so the challenge for us is to look at our lives, to look at all the routines that we have, all the relationships that we have, and to say, which ones of these have I gotten complacent in? Which ones of these have I gotten to the place where I'm just going through the motions or just trying to grit my teeth to get through it, to get to the next thing? And what could they look like if I actually love them the way that Christ has called me to love them for the first time? What could my relationship with my spouse look like? What could my relationship with my children look like? What could my relationship with my coworkers look like? What could my relationship with my boss look like? What could my relationship with the people that I've entrusted to lead look like if I begin to treat them the way that Christ has called me to treat them? So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to pray, but when I pray, I'm going to have a moment where I'm actually going to get silent. I'm going to invite each of us to lift up one piece of our lives that we want to inject Christ into this week. And we're going to lift all of those things up and hopefully be inspired and strengthened that Christ transformed that and give us an image of what the kingdom of heaven and true disciples of Christ look like. Will you pray? Gracious and loving God, you came into this world and you demonstrated to us what it truly looks like to have a single supreme being that we can put all of our trust and hope in. And so, God, as we go through this world, as we have these pieces of our lives that we haven't used to honor you, I ask, God, that you provide for us inspiration on how we can begin to do that this week, and that we might begin to see what true joy looks like as a result. And so, God, I'm going to take a moment, and we're going to each lift up silently those things in our lives, that one piece of our existence that we wish to be more closely related to you, so that you might begin to show us what it could look like. Gracious God, empower us, strengthen us, inspire us to reboot our lives such that the only things left are things that allow us to honor and exemplify your name from sunup to sundown until we join you for all eternity. Amen.